Some members of far-right groups are turning up at protests over police brutality. It's true around the country and here in Wisconsin. Not everyone at these demonstrations supports racial justice. Some people, our guest says, are trying to hijack the gatherings for their own reasons. It's The Morning Show. I'm Keely Boltina in for Kate Archer-Kent, and you're part of our conversation. What question do you have about what's happening here? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Have you been part of one of these protests? Have you noticed people who are working for a different agenda? Email ideas@WPR.org or call 800-642-1234. Our guest is Shannon Reed, an associate professor in the Criminal Justice and Criminology Department at the University of North Carolina, Charlotte. Her research focuses on street gangs and white power street gangs. Shannon, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me.
We need to define some terms here, I think, before we move forward. What's the difference between white nationalist groups and white supremacy?
So people use these terms a lot of times interchangeably. They overlap quite a bit. Probably the most straightforward way to think about white nationalists versus white supremacists is, at the end of the day, they both feel that whites should be top dog. But white nationalists feel like they should have an ethno-nationalist state that is whites only. And white supremacists feel more that the white people are superior, and therefore, even if it's a diverse culture that they'll maybe tolerate, white should still be at the top of that food chain. But generally, they tend to blur together, right? I mean, if you feel that your white race is superior to another race, as you walk further down that line, you feel like you should be separate from all the other groups because you are superior. So they tend to bleed together. And you'll see in a lot of articles, people use them interchangeably. There is that slight distinction, but there tends to be a lot of overlap in sort of the underlying belief system of superiority.
So tell us about the far right groups that are participating in these protests in the wake of the police killing of George Floyd. Who are they?
So there are a lot of groups, and I want to preface that by saying these groups exist on a spectrum. So you have, you know, sort of what we study, which is the more youthful offenders who are out. They're the ones starting the fight. So we think about Proud Boys, Adam Waffen Division, the Rise Above movement, Patriot Prayer, who is showing up at a lot of these rallies. They tend to be younger. They tend to be involved in street level violence. And now and that goes all the way to the spectrum of sort of older, more established groups like the KKK, who may not be at these protests, but are still active online and in person in other ways. But the youthfulness is the piece that we are interested in, because with youth comes violence, right? And by youth, I mean sort of like that 13 to 25 range. They are the more willing to be violent, and so they are the ones that we see showing up at a lot of these protests. And now we're hearing things about Boogaloo Boys and other groups. So it's not that there are, oh, these five groups always show up, because there will be local groups, local people, local chapters. And I mean chapters loosely, but it's not like, oh, here's the five people who are always going to show up. It's going to vary by locality how they reference themselves.
Before we continue this conversation, how much attention should we give these far-right groups if they're showing up at protests trying to undermine the message that Black Lives Matter, that police brutality is unacceptable?
So I think there's, as a researcher, my answer to that is we need to be paying more attention to them, because there's a tendency, especially by law enforcement and some news, to sort of dismiss them as almost like a subculture, right? So if you think about them like, oh, these are just people going through a phase, right? They got sort of wrapped up in this internet, and they're not serious, they're not important, then we're not keeping track. And so if we don't keep track, we don't know what the reality is of how many people there are, who's doing what. We tend to find out about individuals as they participate in violence, and we can't avoid that violence if there's no sort of system in place to keep track. And so sometimes we liken it to the gang databases, which people have a lot of problems with. But especially when you think about places like Portland, where we've had a lot of white power groups pop up, but their gang database is majority minority. So if you have police departments and different agencies kind of dismissing them as, you know, people going through a phase or a subculture, then we end up missing them when something happens, right? It ends up being an internet where somebody tries to find whoever this is online, and it sort of becomes an online hunt versus this person is known to us, because chances are these people are known to the police. They're involved in other things, drug sales, other types of violence, sort of that cafeteria style offending that we talk about. So it's kind of a difference between who's paying attention. Do we need to talk about them in the news and sort of bolster them that way? Maybe less, but if we continue to ignore that they are a concern and ignore the fact that they are showing up to these things, then we are doing ourselves a disservice because we don't know what to look for. And as researchers, we don't have a way to intervene. So, or policymakers, right? People are joining these groups for a reason. And the same way we did with street gangs, we need to know what that reason is. And some of that requires keeping track.
Shannon Reed is an associate professor at the University of North Carolina, Charlotte, and she researches street gangs and white power street gangs. And we are talking about an effort by some far right groups to undermine the protests against police brutality. And we're taking your calls, your questions at 800-642-1234. Have you been following the protests online or on social media? What are you seeing? What are you hearing from people who've been at the protests, or maybe you've been at one and you've noticed people who seem to have a different message than the overall demonstration? How much attention do you think we should pay to them? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Shannon, you just mentioned Portland. The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel here in Wisconsin reported that a man wearing a Ku Klux Klan hood and robe or that style was seen Friday evening walking his dog and waving at traffic in Vilas County in northern Wisconsin. How widespread are these beliefs about white supremacy?
Well, there was a survey that came out recently that said about 6% of the American population is sympathetic to these sort of white power beliefs. So it's pretty widespread. I mean, it's not widespread in the sense that everybody is involving themselves in this sort of quote unquote white power movement. But I think we have a decent population who is sympathetic to the cause. And I say cause loosely, right? Because they all have a slightly different cause. You know, everybody's coming at it from a different ideology, different angle. But I think we are seeing now that there are more and more people kind of willing to go outside and show up to these things and show that they are part of this white power movement. And I don't say movement in the sense of like there's organization, but when we think about all of the stuff that happens online and this idea of irony, right? A lot of these groups form online using memes and pushing this idea of ironic, like the Pepe memes and things like that, right? They're using irony. But even if that guy was wearing that KKK outfit ironically as walking his dog, at the end of the day, whether or not you're wearing that ironically, you're still giving a racist message. So that's the problem with then saying, oh, I'm just doing this ironically. We see it with the white power, you know, the OK symbol. Oh, we don't mean it like that. It's hard for people to, the average person, kind of disentangle who's being serious. So it kind of has been able to kind of come under the radar a little bit. of if that guy gets arrested, he says, oh, I'm just joking, right? Well, are you just joking? And to the person who sees you, is that a joke? Right. Probably not.
We've heard that from different we've heard that from different groups too. Say something offensive and then say, oh, it was just a joke. It was just a joke. So therefore, they're trying to take away the meaning from it. There's another kind of jokiness here. We just have a bit of time in this segment, but the Boogaloo Boys, sources say yes. They admit that they wear Hawaiian shirts. What is it about this group?
So the Boogaloo Boys are interesting. So they're very, let me rephrase that. They're not new online. So they are coming out of the gun forums, like on 4chan and 8chan. They're sort of in the same way the alt-right was kind of the far-right, extreme right 2.0, like trying to rebrand. It seems like the Boogaloo Boys are kind of this rebrand of the militia movement because some of them have white supremacy or, white power leaning, some don't. But they're very strongly pro Second Amendment. And so the Hawaiian shirts and the igloos and all the coded language is to make them, again, stand out and bring attention to their cause, right? So a lot of the white power symbology has had to go back to stealthiness, right? Mm. It's hard for the average person to see a Nordic ruin on somebody and realize, oh, that's part of X group, right?
Right. But if you're part of that group, you're able to actually recognize it. And then it is, some sort of coded message there. We're talking with Shannon Reed, who works in the criminal justice and criminology department at the University of North Carolina, Charlotte. And she researches these street gangs, at white power street gangs. And we're taking your calls, your questions at 800-642-1234 as we discuss why some people who are part of these far right groups are showing up at protests in the name of racial justice and against police brutality. It's The Morning Show. It's The Morning Show. I'm Peely Boltina. Right now, we're talking about this idea that some far-right groups have. They're trying to widen our divisions and provoke law enforcement. Our guest, Shannon Reed, studies these groups and their tactics, and we're talking about them now because people who want to undermine racial justice are joining protests right now. Your calls are welcome at 800-642-1234. How much attention do you think we should pay to these groups trying to undermine the goal of the protests? Do you agree or maybe disagree that they're actually discrediting the message? Why is that? 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Shannon, what is the point that these white supremacist groups are protesting in the name of, racial justice and trying to stop police brutality against people of color?
So there's sort of two purposes.
Okay.
So for the groups, say, like the Boogaloo Boys, they are potentially there because they are against big government. And they are probably more on the side of defunding the police because they want that military power, right? It's harder to enforce a red flag law if the police do not have sort of the firepower or sort of the ability that they have to, come to your house and take your guns. If I have 47 guns and the officer only has one and no backup, that's a different, right? That it takes the teeth out of laws like that. So it's not necessarily that they are anti-police brutality. Some of them are, but it's more that they are anti-large-scale police militarization. The other part of the groups, the more sort of white power groups that show up to these, are there for what we sort of talk about is accelerationism, which is the idea that if we are able to have a moment that sparks the national consciousness in such a way that we can hasten forward either a race war or a civil war. So they are hoping these moments, whether it's you know, the reopen protests or the Black Lives Matter sort of anti-police brutality protests, if that's the moment, they will capitalize on that moment, right? It's less that they care if the state reopens. It's less that they care about police brutality in and of itself. But if these are the moments that will spark this revolution, then they want to be on the front line of that. And if they have to instigate it in any way, then they will do so, right? If it's looting, if it's, you know, these different acts that will kind of push things to a boiling point, then that's their end game. And I say their end game, again, not in a very organized manner. There's no thousand-person group who's coming together to organize this. It's sort of more these small factions who, like the larger group, is sort of hoping this spark will happen, but there's no sort of organization about how they are going to do that. And so that's why, and for the reopen, there's a lot of room for recruitment. So we've seen this in other white power groups for the last, you know, since the beginning of, you know, the KKK. You take people who are unhappy and feeling that they are being taken advantage of or left behind in some way, and you offer them an answer to a problem. And if you show up at the reopen and you say, hey, let me tell you why the government's doing this, right? You start subtle and then you build into the deeper conspiracy theories. But those people may be more open to that versus when you show up at the police brutality, that's more, you know, there's probably less people to recruit, but more people to say, start this, you know, sort of explode this moment and exploit it for their purpose.
Shannon Reed focuses her research on street gangs and white power street gangs, and we're talking about why we're seeing some of these far right groups or self-proclaimed members show up at protests that are actually in favor of racial justice and against police brutality. And Shannon, as we talk about these groups, there's not one big organizational umbrella. There aren't orders coming down from the top. Everybody shows up maybe for their own reasons. Should police classify some of these white supremacy groups as gangs?
Absolutely. And that's what we talk a lot about in our book, is that right now, police, policymakers, different agencies, even the public, right? When you see these groups, especially the groups of younger individuals committing these violent acts, whether it's beating somebody up or and it ranges from, you know, sort of a traditional hate crime all the way to non-hate crimes, right? Drug selling, there's been homicides of family members. So it's not always sort of ideologically based violence or ideologically based crimes. That if law enforcement took them seriously as a street gang, the way they do minority communities, we would be able to intervene in probably a lot of the same ways that we intervene with gangs. So when we talk to members of these groups, these white power groups, they show a lot of the same risk factors and sort of protective factors, if there are any, as street gang members. The problem is when most people think of a street gang, they think black, brown, you know, communities. They don't think white kids. So that's just a national, that's just a bias. It's a bias in our research. It's a bias with departments, police departments, law. You know, there's a sense that a white youth in these groups is just going through a phase, but a black or brown kid is a hardened gang member. So it's limiting both in what we can do as researchers, but limiting in what we can do as policymakers, right? So we know these programs work for gang members, but these members, these white member, right, sort of the racist members are not receiving these services because they are not given that label. And we can talk about whether we think labels are good or bad, but at the end of the day, if what these youth need are pro-social, you know, sort of opportunities, and they are not receiving them, then that should be an intervention point, a prevention point that right now everybody says, oh, I don't, why would anybody join these groups? And we know the answer to that if you look at the street gang literature.
Yeah. If police step up at these protests, if they recognize the dangers of having people of these far-right groups there, and they act against white supremacy at the protests, does that solve the problem?
No, it doesn't solve the problem, because the problem is a community level problem, right? I mean, the same way street gangs are a community level issue, so is white power groups. So you can arrest as many people as you want, and they'll enter the criminal justice system and the prison system, where we have even more white power, more established white power prison gangs. So, you know, we need to go back to the community and really figure out why are people joining these groups? What are these groups, at least surfacely offering them, right? Gangs offer, they pretend to offer a lot of things, but they don't really offer much of anything except higher risk. So, you know, what are people being promised that they feel that they need, and how can we meet that at a policy level? The reason we need law enforcement to take them seriously right now is because we don't even know where to start, right? Mm. We don't know what schools these kids are coming from, what communities these youth are coming from, where these people are coming, right? We just have nothing. So if we want to institute a policy that targets them, we need to know where they are and where they're coming from. So we need law enforcement to take it seriously at that level.
Shannon, thank you for explaining your research to us.
I appreciate the opportunity.
Shannon Reed is an associate professor in the Criminal Justice and Criminology Department at the University of North Carolina, Charlotte. Her new book called Alt-Right Gangs, A Hazy Shade of White, comes out in September. Just ahead, careers after college are evolving due to the pandemic. We're checking in with recent graduates and learning what the future looks like for them. Did you just graduate from college? Looking for jobs now? Do you have one lined up, but maybe it was canceled? Give us a call, 800-642-1234. We're taking your calls as the morning show continues. I'm Keely Boltina, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.